today we have Steven from Chelsea Grin with us. And Steven is the guitarist for Chelsea Grin. We're super stoked to chat with you about your history and also about the new albums, plural, that are being that are going to come out here soon. We're really stoked. But before then, how are you doing, Steven?
I'm awesome, man. I'm stoked to be here. We were just talking about it, but I'm getting ready to go rehearse for this Europe tour we got coming up. So it's just busy, finishing a couple albums for some bands in my studio. So I'm just like working, which I love.
Very cool. It looks like you're kind of in a deathcore dungeon right now.
I am. My studio is dark and moody and like full of tapestries and perfect for being in a horrible mood, right?
It looks like all of the girls' like college dorm rooms when I went to college.
Yeah, exactly. And that shit pisses me off. So it's like, I'm in here, I'm pissed, I'm looking at all this stuff. I'm like, God, I'm tacky.
You just got college girls on your mind. That's all right.
Maybe 10 years ago when I was a college lad myself.
Well, let's talk about the new albums that are going to be coming out here very shortly. You've got one that's actually going to be coming out at least at the time of the recording, exactly next week, called Suffer in Hell. And then you have a follow-up to that called Suffer in Heaven that's going to be coming out in mid-March. I'm really curious about this project. You know, there are not too many metal bands out there, at least the metal bands I listen to, that write enough songs where they're able to put out two albums basically back-to-back. You know, normally, especially during these times, you know, it seems like it's just impossible to get a bunch of people together to write music. And so it just takes an album a very long time to come about. I'm just so shocked that you guys are able to put out two albums. You basically had enough music to put out two albums essentially back to back. Can you talk a little bit about the whole process? Was there a concept that you had in mind where you wanted to have two albums come back to back? Or like, yeah, I'm just curious about like that whole background process.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty crazy process. We didn't, like, when the writing began for this album, which was basically even a couple months before we recorded our last album, Eternal Nightmare, when the writing began, there was no talk of, like, a double album. The double album thing didn't come into play until we finished recording what we thought was going to be the album, and we were like, damn, we're not done. We've still got some bangers in the pool here, so let's just keep recording and get some more studio time. And then we were like, shit, 16 deathcore songs is a lot for one album. Like, who wants to, none of us, as avid of a metal listening fans as we are, would want to sit and listen to 16 songs back to back. Like, that's kind of an endeavor. So we're just like, all right, let's just turn it into two. And, you know, I think a lot of people, it would have been cool to like go to the studio with that as the plan. We could have like conceptualized it lyrically and stuff, but we did sort of tie it together as much as we could to be like thematically, you know, conjoined. But, you know, it's just a big mass of music. So like I said, you know, we were writing for it for a long time. I mean, I think I brought like 30 ideas to the studio, and that's like different stages of completion, you know, like some, sure, of them are a few riffs together that I'm like, we have to figure out a way to make this a full, you know, a full track, and some were, you know, ready to go, completed, just needed to be tracked and spiced up. So it's just an always writing thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people feel pressure to like write full songs and bring them to the studio, but the studio for us is where we're like, all right, we're all together for once. None of us live together, so, or in the same city at all, or state. So the studio is like when we know it's going to be collaboration time. It's going to be like, all right, all heads together. And so we know if we bring in, you know, partial ideas, they're going to be fully fleshed pretty easily, you know. So it seems like a lot, but then also it was years in the making. You know, we had more time than usual. And we did go into the studio planning to have the album out, you know, maybe 2.5 or 3 years after the, you know, the previous album. But things just didn't work out that way. And a whole slew of complications, you know, pandemic on top of many other things just made it so we had more time. And so more time to write, you know, it kind of like eased some of that pressure and just made it easy to produce material.
I dig that. What I found very interesting is the image of the band has kind of taken a more modern change, I would say. It seemed like, you know, albums past, there was a little bit of a theme, like with the album artwork and everything. But the new ones, I am absolutely in love, especially with the Suffer in Hell album cover. And I got to ask, you know, just being a massive Lord of the Rings fan, I know you're a massive Lord of the Rings fan. Is that the Eye of Sauron on the chest of that dude?
It's not, but I think maybe this is why I was drawn to it. It was like, for many other reasons, but like, yeah, I saw that and that was my first thought. I was like, that's the Eye of Sauron.
Well, in that same vein, you know, you guys came out with some really, really interesting music videos that you don't really see kind of from, you know, the deathcore, death metal genre ever, right? I mean, no one ever wants to have fun. Everyone's just trying to be the most scary, the most, you know, straight out of hell look possible. But you guys are like, no, we're going to make a Western, and then we're going to make a Dungeons and Dragons, and then like this, like, alien man thing. I don't even know what it is, but they're really, really creative. Specifically with the new one, Forever Bloom, I find it very, very interesting with the Dungeons and Dragons motifs you guys got going on. Also, did I catch a Denethor reference in there with the tomato eating?
Oh shit, I didn't think about the Denethor, but like, yeah, me eating the cheese puffs and like, you know, like the tomato splashes down his chin. I just had cheese dust just splashed down my tunic. You know what? That wasn't a conscious decision, but maybe subconscious.
I bet it was subconscious. How much fun was it making those videos?
It's fun, man. It's like, you know, music videos for bands are notoriously days where you're like, damn it, I've got to go like headbang for 8 hours and like pretend to play the same crap for 8 hours and like stand. It's an uncomfortable day. And 8 hours is like if you get it done, right? Like if you're really cranking it out. So that never happens. But like, you know, they're notoriously frustrating days. So, you know, for one, it was like a breeze. We just got to mess around, have fun. We didn't even play our instruments for, you know, the two like sort of humorous videos we've done. And like, it just changes up the whole experience. It's much more lighthearted, much more exciting. None of us are actors, but it's fun to, you know, pretend for a day. And it's just, none of us are very serious people. I mean, we're serious when it comes to our business, but we're not. If you're around us, it's all jokes, it's all fun, it's all lighthearted. And I think we don't want to just always present ourselves as, you know, we don't want to present ourselves as something that we're not. You know, we are a metal band at the end of the day, but we like to have fun too. And it's a lot of just jokes and silly times with us. So we wanted to reflect that, you know.
Over all these years of interviewing bands now, especially, you know, bands in the heavy music world, it is kind of weird to think that, you know, a lot of times the image that we get of these bands is, you know, aggressive, it's tough, it's scary or whatever, when actually in reality they're like either the nicest guys or the jokiest, goofiest guys. And it's kind of weird then that oftentimes that image rarely gets portrayed to fans because of whether it's music videos, album art, or whatever it might be. And so I always really appreciate a band that actually is willing to engage that side of their personalities because I think it brings a different perspective that fans might have with that band.
Yeah. You know, it's all about the relationship you have with your fans. That's pretty much the most important thing. That's what propels everything forward. And so if we can become closer or help our fans understand who we are a little bit better without the chance of actually speaking with them directly, then, you know, that's awesome to us. Like, it's just a better way of connecting. You know, I think it shows that we are just like personable, funny people, and there's no like ego of having to be mean and sketchy and like, well, sketchy is the wrong word, but like scary, you know, like there's none of that to us. So yeah, that connection, I think it just helps sort of solidify the bond we have with, you know, listeners or just people who enjoy Chelsea Grin, want to get to know us a little bit better, but you know, we don't hang out one-on-one.
You know, speaking with that bond and everything, there's a, you know, there's no original members of Chelsea Grin anymore. How would you say like that has changed the music in general? Because in my opinion, from what I've seen, like, it's become much more, I would say, sophisticated, maybe a little bit more technical. And then also like a bunch of like new modern elements that deathcore is not exactly known for, you know, innovating all that much, but you guys have certainly done that, especially on this new album from what everything I've heard so far. Yeah, just really curious how the changing members and everything like that has benefited Chelsea Grin.
Well, it's like, at least for myself, you know, I've listened to this band when I was young. I was listening to the original EP and stuff like that. So it's almost as though the time I spent growing as a writer was spent, you know, having Chelsea Grin on my playlists, you know. So it influenced my writing, and I think this is part of why it's sort of natural for me to have at least that Chelsea Grin like core vein running through everything. I mean, I toured with the band also working as a guitar tech for years before joining. And so it's like, I've been listening to this band, whether I like it or not, on stage, watching them and helping them and then performing with them for so long now that it's like, I know how Chelsea Grin sounds. So while we do sound different at this point, it's like, I'm conscious of including, you know, the band's identity throughout the years, throughout in everything I'm writing moving forward. But also just people's influences are different. The artists I listen to directly influence, like I was just saying, the music that I'm writing. And so you can hear that a lot, especially in, you know, this new record or the new records, you know, Eternal Nightmare, so on and so forth. And so, you know, it's only natural that as new people come in, then they're drawing from different pools of inspiration. And, you know, it's also only natural when people get older and like have spent more years writing that you refine that process. So like, it's hard to have two albums sound the same when you're writing them a couple years apart, because a couple years is a lot of growth as a person and as a creative. So like, there's just an inevitable change that's going to happen as a band ages, as the members age, as members shift. But what I think is the challenge is maintaining some ode to the original sound. So for me, I have to be mindful of that. I know that people are conscientious and like to bring up the fact that there's nobody original. And so it does create a sort of need to be like, hey, yeah, it's nobody original. Maybe it sounds different. But if you're like really paying attention, if you listen to every song, some songs more than others, you will hear, you know, that original Chelsea Grin sound. But growth is inevitable.
How would you describe that sound? Yeah, what would you say is that core Chelsea Grin sound? What is that? How would you describe it?
I mean, so I look at it from like the perspective of a guitarist, and you listen to original Chelsea Grin stuff, and this is like nerd talk for guitar players maybe, but like, you know, riffs that chug and then quickly dive into like trem picking sections and then, you know, resume the chugging and then tons of pinch harmonics, things like this. On the guitarist side of things, you know, heavy breakdowns, you know, surrounded by dark, moody melodic riffs. This is all stuff that Chelsea Grin used, especially on like their first three or four albums, you know. So like, it's easy for me to be like, all right, I need to include these staple guitar sounds, at least, you know. That's my job, to bring those sounds on the guitar, which I think was a really identifying thing for the band. But as far as the broader sound of Grin, it's just pummeling heavy. It's got peaks and valleys, you know. It's not just one mood the whole time. They did a really good job of creating pretty dynamic. I mean, you know, like the first couple albums are just outrageously heavy and and you know, moshy, but like they create good dynamic. And so that's just developed to like to where we are now, where the band has always been kind of able to do whatever, because every album has a diversity sonically throughout it. But yeah, it's Chelsea Grin is a lot of sounds, you know. Original Chelsea Grin too.
Totally. No, I would agree. And I think that that's totally true. You know, there is a lot of that original DNA still in there, and hopefully you didn't interpret me wrong by saying that it's a completely different thing. 'Cause it's not. I mean, there's definitely that original sound still there.
You know? Oh yeah. I mean, it is undeniably different sounding. I would never tell somebody, hey, no, this sounds exactly like, you know, it's a very different band at this point.
For sure.
You know, in many ways.
One of the other things that is kind of curious with a band that has been around, I guess, 15 years now, right? Chelsea Grin got started in 2007 and then released the first album just over a decade ago now. the music industry has changed so much, and especially for as heavy of a band as Chelsea Grin, I'm just like really curious about like how that then affects, you know, how the music industry changing so much affects a particular band like Chelsea Grin. If we interviewed, like, let's say some sort of pop artist, like there's a certain way, I guess, that maybe the music industry changing has changed the way that they are as an artist. But I would imagine for a band as heavy as Chelsea Grin is, it really does kind of mess with like, how do we make it as a band? Like, what, you know, what does it look like to record? What does it look like to tour? All of these different things about being a band. So I'm curious, like for you, being a part of Chelsea Grin, how would you say that the music industry changing so much over the last decade or so has affected a band like Chelsea Grin?
I mean, when you set out to be in a metal band, especially one as heavy as ours, you know there's, or you expect that there's going to be a certain ceiling to your size, you know, your success. And I think throughout the last 10 years, that ceiling is raising higher and higher. Now, it may not be, you know, as big as, you know, these major pop artists, or, you know, even like a band like Slipknot. A band as heavy as ours, I doubt would ever get as big as a band like Slipknot. While they are extremely heavy, it's obviously more marketable and like catered toward that in an awesome way. And that's no slight. They're like one of my favorite bands, of course. But, you know, it's that ceiling is raising and allowing artists to grow and play along different avenues than they ever were able to before. And that's kind of a simultaneous change where, like, you know, obviously physical sales and things like that aren't nearly what they used to be. And that's a topic that it's, you know, beating a dead horse, right? But like, you know, you just sort of have to adapt where your income is coming from, where you're, where the statistics that people are looking at to, you know, consider your band for tours, consider a lot of different things, like how to, which statistics to look at and which statistics to kind of gauge yourself by. You know, there are quite a number of changes, but I would really say that it's become easier for a band like us to grow and reach different places and heights that we hadn't before. I mean, our band has always been sort of a slow rise. It's not like at any point in our career we shot up to becoming massively popular type situation. It's just been a slow burn, but it's been a constant rise. And then you see lately that a lot of bands are gaining this insane new steam. Like Lorna Shore is a great example mm-hmm. of this, where they're so fucking massive right now. And like just them doing what they're doing and witnessing that whole situation is like a massive indicator that there are more people in the world that are willing to listen to this music. And that's a, you know, it's a growing scene, that's for mm-hmm. sure. I think more people are coming in, and then the industry is recognizing that, and I think allowing that.
Right. I mean, Turnstile was just on the Taco Bell commercial. Obviously, very different sound, not a metal band, but still like a
very
heavy band
in comparison,
on
yeah.
a Taco Bell commercial. Like, there's clearly people that are still really interested in this type of music.
Yeah, that's a huge example. Turnstile and like Bring Me the Horizon.
Yeah.
I mean, that band didn't just blow up or become as huge as they are. But I mean, you think about where Bring Me the Horizon started. They were as heavy as
anyone.
Chelsea Grin, you know
yeah.
what I mean? And so it's like, you know, seeing that happen is really exciting. And there's a lot of bands like Motionless and White, Wage War. These are bands that maybe are in a different pocket of metal than we are, but you know, there's similar roots. You know, these are bands that we've toured with. These are bands that it's not out of the question for us to continue touring with. So yeah, it's just becoming bigger and bigger. And I don't know if that's so much the business side of the industry as it is just the consumer side of it. But
is Tom kicking himself for joining Chelsea Grin and not stay with Lorna Shore?
No, I think he's happy to be where he is. You know, it's, you know, we've asked him that, or, you know, just brought it up as a joke. They're like, damn, look at Lorna Shore go. You wish you were. But he's, I mean, I think everybody's just happy to be where they are. I think things
absolutely
wouldn't have unfolded the way they did for either of our bands if you know, history didn't take the course that it did. You know, I don't think there's any, like, I mean, it's all, you know, we're still great friends with Lorna, obviously. Like, those are the best dudes ever. There's no like contention, there's no jealousy, or like there's no negativity happening there. So you know, I don't think it fazes Tom. I think he's happy to see his friends doing well.
That's good.
I know he is.
That's awesome. One question I was really curious on was going to 1 RPM. And is that like an independent release then? Is that how that would be classified?
So 1RPM is mainly a distribution company. So it's not considered a label in a way. Yeah, this release is independent, but they do offer label services. So it's like a hub for so many things. They have so many resources that make it really easy. And there is more that we have to do ourselves to make all of this happen. But they are good about being like, hey, did you guys get this done? Whereas the label would be like, okay, we got this done. But it's like, we welcome having a little bit more work in our hands. It makes it more rewarding, gratifying, and gives us an attachment to our business that we haven't had before.
Is it financially more sustainable as an artist to kind of have it more, even though it's more work? Does it actually mean that you get a little bit more money in your own pockets rather than a record company taking a chunk?
Yeah, I mean, every contract is a little bit different, but this is certainly the most favorable contract we've been a part of. And like, it's amazing because things like pre-orders, all these pre-orders that our album is doing, we benefit directly from those. Like the merchandise that is sold. 1RPM does have certain rights with music and whatnot, but we're able to maintain the merch presence, which is something you don't usually get to do with albums. And so, you know, that's a huge benefit to us. That's a massive consideration in our signing with them, is that, you know, it's not all about the money. It's just that the money will allow us to do more and continue this in comfort. And, you know, the band's been around for 15 years. It's like, we would like to, we know how to do so much of this at this point. If we're going to get more money by just doing more work ourselves, then hell yeah. But yeah, it's beneficial for us in a lot of ways, a lot more freedom as well. Not that we've never had a label be like, oh, you can't release this album, you have to change this song, things like that, but just the decisions are in our hands more than ever.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of wondering about that relationship with Rise, especially for a lot of bands. That's the, you know, the creme de la creme. I mean, that's who they want to be with if they can. Making that choice to jump off that ship seems like a very interesting one, and I think one that a lot of people were raising an eyebrow to, like, hey, what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it was no bad blood. It was just like I kind of just said, we've been a band for a long time. You know, our name is out there enough to where we don't need help spreading our name. It's more like if we put out an album, we just need people to know that we're putting out an album. And so a distribution company, and especially one like 1RPM, makes that easy. So we really kind of weighed, you know, the benefits and like the workload difference. We weighed all these factors, and it was just like, it makes sense. We'll make more money this way. You know, it takes a little bit of sacrifice, right? And it's not necessarily always the same as working with a label. Like, it's not always the same set of benefits. And sometimes you get a little more out of your label, but there's certain ends where we're getting a little more out of 1RPM than we ever have. So it's almost like an experiment for us. You know, we're at this point in our careers. It's not going to hurt us to do this. We have faith enough in the album that whatever it sells, whatever it does first week, it's something people will enjoy, whether they hear it first week or come back to it years later. It's something that's irrelevant to us. Our main focus is exercising and expressing ourselves and doing it authentically. And like, this 1RPM thing just really allowed us to do that. So yeah, it's a little science experiment, like I said. Yeah, we're seeing how it's going.
I like it. I think it's always good, especially if you can have a little bit more of your own hands in the process of making the cake, you know? You know, you said that you guys like to joke around, and you guys are, you know, kind of clowns when you're hanging out and stuff, right?
Oh yeah.
What does that look like? I think that's like what every fan wants to know. What does Chelsea Grin do when they're not playing, when they're not, you know, trying to distribute a new record and stuff like that?
And why are you, Steven, always at the butt of the joke?
Right.
Am I always at the butt?
That's what we hear.
That's what I hear.
Really? Shit. That's kind of interesting, because I'm the one that clowns on everybody.
Oh, okay. Well, we might have been making assumptions. Okay, so what does that look like?
Well, I mean, when we're joking around, usually we're together, which means we're on tour, which means we're on the bandwagon or the bus. and we're just all sitting around basically playing games like video games or playing card games, Uno, things like this. And we're all just kind of roasting each other and, you know, having, we don't really drink or anything like that. We're all pretty sober as we do all of this. So it's, you know, it's not quite like the crazy rowdy type of fun. It's more like we're just goofing off, having laughs, telling jokes, like I said, roasting one another and like bringing other people. For us, it's like bringing people into our bus or, you know, to come hang out with us is a big part of it too. Like we love to find people from other bands, be like, hey, you're coming to play Uno right this damn second. We'll get you drunk. You know, we've got this bottle of liquor we're not drinking, so come on up here and have some. So we like to lure people onto our vehicle and get them messed up and force them to entertain us too.
So it sounds like you guys are kind of becoming like a Christian band. Is that true?
100% true.
I knew it. You and Impending Doom going to be hanging out forever, huh?
Honestly, shit. Impending Doom. I need to put them on the thanks for saying that to me. I need to put them on my list of bands. We're trying to think of bands to take out on tour.
They'd be great. They're a lot of fun.
They are.
They're heavy too.
Especially now that we're Christian brothers.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You guys can have Bible studies while you play D&D together.
You go. Now you're talking.
You can pray before your sets. That'd be great.
Dude, it's funny. When I was one of my first bands ever, they were a Christian band, and I'm not religiously affiliated at all. And
wait, hold up. As a Lord of the Rings fan, you're not religiously affiliated with anything?
I mean, maybe I worship.
You at least have to be Catholic to be a Lord of the Rings fan.
Well, you know, I can see beyond. I just enjoy it for the high quality films and books they are.
Hey, there you go.
That's my Bible.
Go talking.
This band was Christian, and like they would want me to come do the prayers with them before the sets. So I would just stand there, just like, hey, go off, guys.
Did they ever ask you to pray for someone?
They would like ask me to lead the prayer, and I would just be like, I'm good. I don't know the words. You guys,
is this a band Cullen and I should know? We grew up in like the Christian heavy music scene, so I feel like we're pretty well versed in most of them, unless they're like a small local band.
This was small local. Okay. This was like, I was like 15, 16. this was way back in the day. So,
you mentioned before you're big Uno players. You Chelsea Grin guys are. Who is the best Uno player in Chelsea Grin?
I would say, well, Pablo, he's not touring, he's not with us at the moment, but he is annoyingly good. But I would say David probably is Master Uno, or Nathan, he's playing drums with us right now. He's particularly successful.
Yeah, Uno is like one of those games where you just have to be super comfortable just backstabbing your friends, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you have no decency, which this is why I'm bad at it. I'm too nice of a guy. I'm too good of a person to be good at Uno.
But you're the one clowning on everyone, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's mostly because I'm pissed off because I'm losing every time.
So it gets personal for you is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's all my hatred and resentments coming out. Uno will do that to you.
It will.
I love when band dudes bring out this like competitive side of themselves, or like even their athletic side. You know, we've interviewed a number of bands where they'll do like races, or you know, they'll try to see who's the fastest guy in the band. And I'm like,
pick up.
I love when a bunch of band dudes are like this, because again, Cullen and I grew up in the music scene, but we were never in bands. We were jocks at the end of the day, and so it's so funny to see like these people that we probably would have made fun of for being band dudes now actually like get their, you know, all their inner jockiness comes out. It's so fun to watch it happen.
Hell yeah. I mean, I bring a soccer ball on tour every time, and anytime we're anywhere near an open space, I'm out there juggling and playing soccer, and usually I can get the boys to come out and play with me. They're all pretty bad, so it's like kind of annoying when they do, but like
there's a big skill difference in soccer. Like if you're like even like semi good, you're way better than someone who's just like okay, or even that's like semi athletic. It's nuts.
That's super accurate, actually, because I'm only semi good, but like, yeah, I'll play with the guys and just be like, dude, you're like, I'm over here. You're kicking it into a car that's like 50 feet away from me. Come on, bro.
Maybe that should be your criteria when you bring bands on to tour with you, is just like figure out who are the bands that are really good at soccer. So that way, at least you have like somebody that's competitive with you.
That's true.
Like, who cares if they're a big band, or who cares if they're even like a good metal band? Like, just bring out guys who are really good at soccer.
100%. Well, there's probably some Australian bands that I could, that we're close friends with that I know are amazing at soccer. I know that Nick from Make Them Suffer is a fantastic soccer player.
Really? That's interesting.
He'll be getting an offer.
Well, hey, when you guys go on tour here in Europe, your big European and Australian tour, I mean, I guess it's both continents there. I'm sure you're going to find a whole bunch of bands that know how to play some soccer there, huh?
Well, probably. I know that like Marshy from Dyer, I'm pretty sure he plays some soccer as well. I think CJ does as well. I could be mistaken, but Europe, I don't know. Either way, it's the dead of winter, so it's like,
that's true.
I don't know if I'm gonna be playing anything. I don't know.
Australia won't be though.
Outdoors. What's that?
Australia won't be. They'll probably be in summer, right?
Because they're summer,
on the other side. Yeah.
Hell yeah! I can't wait. I'm like trying to tack a couple extra weeks onto the trip, just post it up.
There you go.
So how does that work? I'm always curious, especially with a band that's your size, you know, going to Europe and then Australia, that seems like a massive, massive, massive undertaking. And one that takes quite a bit of cheddar, you know, to get rolling, to even get over there. Now you guys are doing a bunch of dates. I'm curious what that's going to look like. Also, what show are you most excited for?
In Europe, I think I love playing Munich. I love playing Berlin. The UK is always a blast. Like, most of the UK shows are sold out, if not approaching sold out. So, you know, like, I always know the UK is going to be amazing. It's like the Texas of Europe and UK.
Don't tell that to the Texans. They'd be pissed.
They would, but hey, Texans, I only mean that insofar as the crowds are insane. So it's a compliment. Otherwise, zero.
You know, nothing says Ted Cruz than the UK.
I'm sure they have a Ted Cruz equivalent. Over
I guess
there,
they have Boris Johnson.
I was going to say Boris would be, yeah.
It takes, well, we won't go there. But yeah, yeah.
So making that trip happen and then going to Australia, I mean, what's the logistical setup for all that? Do you guys send all your stuff over separately, or do you guys borrow from someone else? Or
so you rent most of the gear when you go and do this. I mean, like, the drum kit is entirely rented. The drummer will just bring like cymbals and pedals and, like, you know, for the most part, I mean, it depends on your setup. You know, we have a bunch of gear, so we still do fly over with a fair bit, but there's certain bulky and annoying items that we don't have to fly around with. So, you know, you rent a lot of that. That helps. Like, baggage fees are a huge pain in the ass. We'll fly with like 14 pieces of luggage or so. And that's nothing compared to some bands.
Right.
But we'll,
I was
going
to say,
like,
if I take a Spirit flight, like, I refuse to take a carry-on because I'm not paying that extra baggage shit. So I'm like, I guess everything's going in my little backpack.
Yeah. Try to fit a guitar in your
backpack. That's what I just can't imagine.
That this is a lesson that we recently learned. Even though you may get a cheaper flight through a bargain airline, you will spend way more on your luggage.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to book some last minute flights, and this is like, it was like the only option that was a reasonable price. But then in the end, I did the math, and it's like we spent more doing that.
So it's fly Emirates from here on out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm gonna become a Medallion member.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of planning, and it's a lot of money. You know, it depends on the time of year you're going. But flying to Australia is like crazy expensive right now. So
yeah.
You just have to anticipate these things and plan for it. It's like, obviously this comes out of your pay, but what are you going to do? You gotta buy the tickets.
Yeah.
So you just have a financial team that, you know, our management runs finances for us. You know, we all keep an eye on it, but it's like, they let us know, hey, this is what's coming in, and this is how you need to prepare for these expenses down the line. It's really stressful, but it's always worth it. It's just it's the lay of the land, just how it goes. You know, we're powerless to it, so
gotta spend money to make money.
We can Yeah, we're just grateful that we can afford to do these things and can make them happen.
Absolutely. We were talking to our friends from Northlane who are from Australia, and they were discussing just how difficult it was to get out of Australia in order to, you know, tour, because I mean, Australia is such a small market in itself. It's only like the size of Los Angeles, essentially, like the metro area. And they said it's the biggest obstacle and the biggest burden is to just get out of Australia in order to tour. So, you know, kudos to you guys for making it work. And, you know, with everything you guys got going for you, I'm sure it's going to be a huge success.
Yeah, the Australia tour is already massive. Most of the shows they're all going to sell out for sure. It's just some of them are already sold out like a week after we announced it. And it's just a massive tour. So
yeah, they're starving for it down there. They want some Chelsea grin.
Well, it's also Die Hard is Murder is headlining, doing the Hate 10-year with Whitechapel, us, and Spite. So it's like, there's never been a sicker deathcore package.
That's the Mecca ticket right there.
It truly is.
Yeah, that's absolutely
awesome. That's awesome. Should we get into top 10 or top 5?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Let's think. Top 5 albums. I think my number one, maybe my number one and my number two are both Dimmu Borgir albums. There's In Sorte Diaboli, which was a really big one for me. I feel like not a lot of people consider that their like top Dimmu, but it was pretty influential on me, especially at the time it hit. And I remember hearing like the Serpentine Offering, and I was just like, this is my dream to create. So you hear any black metal influences in my stuff or any symphonic stuff in Chelsea Grin, that's because of Dimmu Borgir.
Oh, cool.
Also, Puritanical Euphoric Misanthropia is another album by them that's probably my favorite. That's the sickest album of all time to me.
Dude.
So, actually, Cattle Decapitation, they have a recent record. Their most recent record is called Death Atlas. Came out in 2019. And it's newer, and I've always loved Cattle Decap, but when this one came out, it was like, this is genius. It's just so damn good. And I was actually talking with their drummer, and he was like, yeah, it's kind of a slow album for us. It was a slower one. And I'm like, dude, I mean, I know from listening to your band that you're like the fastest, but like, this is, I would never want to have to play this, but it's just so masterful. And it's like a really great concept album, sort of about the state of the world and like, you know, climate change and all these things and how we're just destroying our earth. And they do such a good job of keeping that theme going without like burning it out, you know, and just everything about it's amazing. It sounds fantastic.
Well, one thing to note on that I find interesting, you said that the album came out in 2019, so it's pretty recent. What I love about music right now, and I wouldn't have said this maybe 10, 15 years ago, but the fact that there is still music coming out that influences your life blows my mind, right? If I was 16, I would have thought all the albums that I loved at 16 were going to be the only albums that influenced my life. But to think that 15 years later or whatever, that there's still music coming out that is really, really important to me, I think it's just really great. And I think it's a really great sign of like how great of music there is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't expect to find one of my favorite albums in my late 20s. You know, it's right. not something I was consciously thinking about, but it's like I find now years later that it's something I listen to constantly. It's like a go-to album for me. If I'm doing anything, it's like you're going to hear Cattle Decap at some point in the week, a few times a week, especially this album. And so I was like, huh, this is one of my favorite, probably most heavily currently influential albums that I'm listening to. You may not hear the influence in like Chelsea Grin, but a lot of stuff, I write a lot of stuff just for myself. I've been like banking a lot of music. And it's like super cattle. It's like Cattle Decap meets Dimmu Borgir. So already kind of covering it, but let's see. I would say there's a band. It's like a sort of a synth based indie band called Empire of the Sun, and they're really big, so I'm sure people have heard of them.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Like the Walking on the Dream or whatever song that was,
I think. So yeah, what is sorry, I have to look this up, the name of the album. It's something Ice on the Dune. Yeah, duh. Okay, sorry, I spaced it for a second. I listened to that album a lot, and I think that one, as far as like structure, and they ride out on parts for a long time, and like they'll have pretty like consistent dynamic through a song, and then you know certain elements will stay the same through the whole song, stuff like that. And to me, that's just really awesome. It like kind of empowers me to be like, you know what, this riff is really sick. I'm gonna play this riff for a really long time and just grow it, you know, like the bass will be there, but I'll just be embellishing it as the riff progresses. So, you know, as not heavy whatsoever as they are, it's an influence on my writing. And I'd say if when I'm not writing metal music, I'm writing music, you know, pretty similar to that. You know, I have a huge spot in my heart for, you know, indie and synth based music. And yeah, so that's a big influence on me for sure. That band rules.
For sure.
I'd say also Nevermore, this godless endeavor. That's a huge one for me. That's like Jeff Loomis is an insane guitarist, and he played guitar on that album in Nevermore. And his playing is massively formational to my playing. I'm nowhere near the shredder he is, but he uses a lot of classical influence. And I grew up, my parents, you know, my dad plays classical music. So I grew up with classical. And when I finally heard a band that really incorporated classical in not a cheesy way, I was like, this, I'm so sold, especially a guitarist playing what I only understood to be like violin licks and things like that. You know what I mean? It just really rocked my world. And it's heavy. It's got groove. It's just weird. It's kind of ahead of its time. I think if that album came out today, it was big back in the day, but it would be big still. It just rings true. It's timeless and beautifully written. And that's a really important one for me.
Dude, those are great choices, man. Great. I can definitely hear, I think every single one of those I can definitely hear in your guitar playing as well, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious where I get my influences from. It's it's funny too, because like a lot of my influences come from older metal and not like the bands a lot of people would expect. But then, you know, you listen, they'll be like, oh, so you're listening to, and they'll list like a bunch of modern bands. And I'm like, actually, I've not even heard that album. you're missing like 20 years before this. That's where I'm getting my shit from. So, yeah. God, I love Dimmu Borgir. Just got to say it again. That's the greatest band of all time.
Everyone's going to be blowing it up on the old Spotify now.
Yeah, you better listen. If you haven't listened and you're hearing this right now, shame on you. I will only forgive you if you go immediately from this at the end of the episode to that.
Love it. All right, Steven, what would you like to plug?
A million things to plug, basically. Where to begin? Well, two new albums, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. November 11th, right?
Yeah, November 11th for Suffer in Hell. March 17th for Suffer in Heaven. So it's coming real soon. The pre-orders are available. Actually, right now, if you pre-order the albums, you're submitted for a chance to win a subscription to Shudder, which is like a horror film streaming service. So Check that out. You know, we have three new singles out. I mean, obviously the album's out in a week, but if you haven't gotten your taste yet, we have Origin of Sin, The Isness, and Forever Bloom. So check those albums out. I mean, those songs out, and they come with videos as well. And then we have a tour coming up with co-headlining with Carnifex in Europe. Body Snatcher is direct support. Varials is with us, and The Convalescence, and that starts the end of this month. So get your tickets if you're out there and you haven't gotten them yet. Tour with Thy Art in Australia in January. And then we're planning some headliners, obviously, for a new album, the new album. So nice. Big touring season next year. So
love it.
Keep an eye out.
And what about your studio?
My studio. Well, I don't have the official business set up yet, but if you go to my Instagram, it's called The Cathedral. It's my personal Instagram, and you can message me. The studio is called The Cathedral. And I do a lot of like songwriting primarily for bands. It's a huge passion of mine. So if anybody needs any engineering, songwriting, anything like that, want to come work with me, I'm in Portland, Oregon. So come to the studio. We have a blast. I'm super busy. So I've been hesitant about plugging the studio because there's so much Chelsea Grin happening right now that like I never know when I'm going to have to be like, oh, I have to go to Salt Lake and shoot promos. Oh, damn. We just booked a tour in that time frame. So I've been skeptical of plugging the studio. I feel like every time I book something, something comes up. Like, shit.
It'll slow down sooner or later. But you probably got a good year and a half of some pretty heavy Chelsea Grin stuff going on, I would say.
It's true. But if you want to do songwriting, hit me up. We can make it work out.
Perfect.
That's a personal plug.
Love it.
Love it.
Anything else you'd like to plug?
Well, speaking of Lord of the Rings, if you haven't seen the original trilogy and you want to see some of my acting skills at play, they actually used my eye for the original Eye of Sauron.
What?
So,
yeah.
Get out.
And they put me in a bodysuit and CGI'd the Balrog. So I'm actually the Balrog too. So anything you see there, it's just me CGI'd to look like a fire demon.
Oh my gosh. You took Gandalf.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he actually, Gandalf and I have some beef because in the end we fell for a long time, but then
long time. Yeah.
He defeated me, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's my dude. There.
I feel so much better knowing that that was you.
Right. And not just some schmuck. Like, you know, it's.
Yeah. Someone who gives a shit.
Yeah. 100%. I couldn't believe it when I nailed the audition. I just had to close my one eye and open the eye.
So glad it wasn't, like some stock footage of somebody who has no idea that their eye was being used for the Eye of Sauron.
100%.
Why do you think they chose your eye?
Well, actually, my pupils are I have like cat eyes. They're not horizontal. They're diamond shaped and vertical. So that was part of it. And also, if I squeeze my brain hard enough, it looks like my eye's on fire.
Damn.
So I was kind of a shoe-in.
Let's hear it for congenital eye defects.
Thank God. Paved the way for my career.
Damn. Steven, thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast. We would love to have you on again at some point. Good luck with the new albums. Good luck with the tour. We'll definitely be keeping a close eye on you because this is the best Chelsea Grin we've ever heard.
Thank you so much. It really means a lot. And I'm stoked to be here, stoked to have chatted. And anytime you want to chat, just let me know.
Absolutely.